saying the words out loud, meaning all of it. The sensation was freeing. "This conflict we have been drawn into is about to get much worse," he told them. "And we have a duty to stop it from devolving into open battle."
"What are you talking about, Lieutenant?"
Wheaton paled. Saru quietly explained the content of the troubling message Burnham had sent from the Shenzhou. He offered Wheaton the earpiece, the decrypted signal still loaded into its internal memory, and one by one the ensign and the non-coms took turns to listen to her warning. Saru watched the slow spread of realization across their faces. "I'm sharing this with you so that everyone here understands the stakes. This is not just about us and Lieutenant Commander Johar. There are people among the Gorlands and the Paliars who will be in grave danger if the shooting starts. I know you believe I am afraid to take a stand, but you have to see the reality of this. I am trying to prevent bloodshed. I can't do it alone. I need you, all of you, to work with me."
"Would the chief engineer agree?" said Wheaton.
Saru's skin tightened around his skull-like aspect. "He can't answer that question, Ensign. Do you want to challenge my command? Go ahead. But it won't change what is coming." Saru wondered if the ensign would oppose him. But then Wheaton blew out a breath and shook his head.
"What exactly is it you want us to do, sir?"
Saru reached for a tricorder resting on the table in front of him, and with the other hand he pulled the slim data card from a pocket. He offered both to the junior engineer. "I need you to program something for me." Then he looked at the rest of them. "And I need you to trust me with your lives." The red bands brought Saru before Mado once again, marching the Kelpian onto the command tier before the leader of the Gorlan hijackers. After learning of his plan, Ensign Wheaton had surprised Saru by insisting on coming with him, ignoring the lieutenant's protestations.
"I've been thinking about being insubordinate all day, sir," he said, "so I'm disregarding your orders to stay put."
Saru felt strangely heartened by the ensign's company, and left Chief Petty Officer Yashe in charge of the remainder of the Starfleet team. He did not allow himself to dwell on the possibility that this might be the last he would see of them, or that those orders might be the last he would ever give.
"Not turning out how you expected, is it?" said Wheaton out of the side of his mouth.
Saru said nothing, catching sight of Nathal and Hekan across the compartment, both of the Paliars under the guns of Mado's men. Commander Nathal gave Saru a hard, unreadable look.
"She blames you, Outworlder,"
said Mado as they approached the main control podium.
"There might be something to that."
The Kelpian's shoulders slumped as he sighed deeply.
"I've done what you asked. This will activate a purge protocol to clear this ship's systems of all automated command and control software."
He offered up the slim data card, and Vetch stepped forward, snatching it from his grip. The speaker flipped it from hand to hand before slotting it into a port on the control panel.
"Purge is running,"
said Vetch as he watched the progress of the program across the screen in front of him.
"Soon this ship will finally be under our control."
"You've doomed us all!"
Nathal called out. Mado eyed Saru with a mixture of arrogance and pity.
"You serve well, Saru. Your Captain Georgiou clearly instilled a sense of discipline in her officers."
He glanced at Wheaton.
"Do all you Starfleet types obey so readily?"
"Not really," admitted Saru, nodding at the ensign. "This one, certainly not."
"It does not matter."
Mado came closer.
"I have a new order for you. You will tell me how and where I need to board the Shenzhou in order to take control of it. You have my word the crew will not be harmed if you assist me."
He paused. Saru could feel the pressure of Mado's aggressive aura field churning at the edges of his senses.
"The Paliars already know the price of defiance. Must I teach it to you as well?"
"No.
Good, Mado went on. Now, do as I...
No, Saru repeated firmly. I will not help you any more. This is as far as I will go.
The compartment fell silent as Mado turned back, one of his hands rising up to rest on a holstered phaser stolen from the Yang.
Saru, you have sung this song before, and it failed then. Do you expect me to believe you have waited until now to grow a spine?
He looked around, finding Vetch and the others, playing to his audience.
Or is it that you doubt me? You don't think that I will take a life to get what I want?
He started to draw the phaser. I do not doubt you, said Saru. I have seen what you did. I know you are more than capable. But my refusal stands. He continued as the Gorlan's face grew thunderous. We will help you take this vessel away from the sanctuary planet, but that is all. We won't give up our ship or any more of our people to you. Mado removed a communicator disc from a pouch on his tunic and raised it to his lips.
Tayak, status?
Standing guard outside the mess hall,
came the gruff reply. Saru recognized the voice as belonging to one of the red bands who had been watching the hostages.
Is something wrong?
We'll see, Mado replied.
Pick out one of the Starfleet captives. Be ready to execute them when I contact you again.
He clicked the channel closed and shot Saru a level look.
Do you want to reconsider your previous statement?
Slowly, Saru drew up until he was standing at attention. I am ashamed that I allowed the situation to go this far.
You should be,
sneered the Gorlan, and with those words he offered up the opening that Saru had been hoping for. Like you? He shot back.
I have no regrets about the choices I have made,
Mado went on.
You're lying, Saru said, refusing to back down. You are ashamed of those choices. That's why you are hiding them from the rest of your people. The other Gorlans, the ones down in the cargo modules, they have no idea what you've done. You haven't told them the price of their safety, because you know they would be appalled by it.
Not as many as you might think, he replied coldly.
Ija would, Saru said firmly, and he saw Vetch and some of the others look away at the mention of her name. That's why you are hiding this from her. The Hub believes in unity and peace. What you are doing dishonors her.
I do what is necessary for our people to survive.
Mado's voice became a snarl.
I protect her from all this. She is not to be sullied.
You lie to her, Saru countered. Tell me how that shows respect, Mado. You lie to her because you know she would never agree to this.
Mado teetered on the edge of imminent violence, and Saru felt his threat ganglia writhing over the flesh of his scalp. Then the Gorlan spat on the deck and rocked back.
What happens next is on your head, Outworlder, he said, bringing up his communicator. I gave you a chance to stop it.
No!
Saru's hand shot out and he snatched at Mado's wrist. One of the Gorlan's arms grabbed his, another ripping the stolen phaser pistol from its holster.
Listen to me, he called out, ignoring the weapon, pitching his voice so that everyone on the command deck could hear him. This vessel needs to leave here immediately. A Pelear warship is on its way, and their intentions are to attack. We are all at risk. We will help you leave, but it must be now.
How do you know this?
Demanded Vetch.
A signal from the Shenzhou, sent to our shuttle. A warning.
You fool,
said Mado, tearing free of Saru's grip.
Is this weak ruse all you have left?
He's not lying, said Nathal, pushing forward. I managed to transmit a distress signal to Pelear Zell when you launched your takeover.
The cohort will have received it and dispatched a warship to track us down. And when they come, it will not be with peaceful intent.
How soon?
Vetch strode over to her, his hands slashing angrily at the air. Nathal shot Saru a look.
I expected them to arrive hours ago.
Computer, scan nearby space, Vetch addressed one of the control podiums. Alert us to any incoming objects.
Processing command,
said a stilted, Pelear-accented voice.
No detections, at this time.
The large scanner screens showed empty space and the planet below. Maddo gave a dismissive grunt.
You are stalling, he concluded. It will gain you nothing.
You're not leaving me with any other option, said Saru. Please, reconsider.
And if I will not?
Saru took a deep breath, and when he spoke again, he pitched his voice toward the nearest console.
Computer, the sun is getting low.
What did he say?
Vetch began.
Processing command, replied the synthetic voice.
A heartbeat later, all but one console in the compartment went dark, and the hatchways leading to the corridors slammed shut. The main screens winked out, and ambient lighting slowly dimmed to less than a quarter of its standard levels.
Computer, respond!
Maddo slammed his fist on the single illuminated console.
Respond, now!
Across the way, Nathal gave a low, humorless chuckle.
Very clever, Lieutenant. The data card, yes? That's how you did it.
At her side, Nathal's second-in-command peered at another dead panel.
Voice-controlled shutdown command linked to a specific key phrase. He reprogrammed one of our own security protocols.
Actually, I did that, said Wheaton. Then reconsidered. Well, team effort. It started running when the data card was uploaded.
Idiot!
Maddo glared at Vetch. Then he rounded on Saru, clutching the phaser in his hand.
What do you think you have achieved here?
He barked. Listen, said Saru, pointing a long finger up at a vent in the bulkhead above them. The atmosphere processors have been deactivated, along with every operational control matrix in this section of the ship. All hatches have been sealed. In a few minutes, life support functionality will cease, and it will get very cold in here very quickly. He gestured to Wheaton. I instructed the ensign to isolate the forward section of the ship only. None of the cargo modules will be affected. The refugees will not be harmed. But everyone in this compartment, your men in the engine core and those in the mess hall or elsewhere, we will either freeze or asphyxiate. He gave Nathal and Hekan a sorrowful look. My apologies.
Undo it,
said Vetch, his voice rising in alarm. Maddo nodded slowly and glared up at Saru.
Do as he says, or I will make your last few breaths agonizing.
No, said Saru. Have your men surrender their weapons and stand down. Relinquish control of this vessel, and I'll deactivate the program. Or else we die here.
I do not fear death,
Maddo retorted.
I believe you, said the Kelpian. The next words he spoke were difficult for him, but he pressed on. That is why I am threatening the one single thing I know you do care about. Eja. The hub.
A ripple of consternation went through the chamber.
We will perish, and this ship will be left to drift with no one to keep her or the rest of your people safe.
If the cohort have declared this ship a renegade, when they arrive they may not even pause before destroying it.
Nathal's bleak prediction only served to narrow the corner that Saru had backed Maddo into. The Gorlan's fierce expression shifted, turning bitter.
I was wrong about you, Kelpian. There is some of the hunter in you, after all. Without it, you could not be so callous.
I asked you to reconsider, he said. We are here now because of you,
Maddo. But it's not too late to step back from the brink.
In the dimness, a polar chill was spreading through the air, and Saru's words escaped in a puff of white exhalation.
Maddo became silent and still as the reality of Saru's threat became clear. He had been outmaneuvered, and he knew it.
"Curse you,"
the Gorlan said stiffly, and then with an angry flick of the wrist, he tossed his stolen phaser to the deck. He raised the communications disc.
"Kindred, this is over. Give up your weapons and stand down. We are returning control of this ship to the Pelears."
His voice was thick with frustration, resignation, and remorse.
"Maddo, are you sure of this?"
Even over the communicator link, Tayak's shock was palpable.
"The deed is done," Maddo told him. "Do as I say."
Wheaton grabbed the phaser as Nathal and Hekan surged forward to disarm the other Gorlans. None of them resisted, but Saru could feel the resentment and dejection coming off them in waves as their aura fields darkened along with their emotional states. When the weapons were gathered up, Wheaton contacted Yashe, and the Vaksha reported that all the hostages were free.
"They gave in quick," said the noncom. "After all that happened, didn't think they would."
Saru shook his head. "It isn't that," he said. "I just didn't give them anywhere to go."
"You have what you want,"
Maddo called out, hugging himself as the cold grew deeper with each passing second.
"Keep your promise, Outworlder."
"Computer," said Saru. "The moons have risen."
"Processing command."
The console accepted the code phrase, and the systems cycled back to an operational state. One by one, the screens hanging over their heads blinked on, showing views of the space beyond the freighter's hull. Out of the cold and the silence, a braying shriek of alarms shocked abruptly through the compartment as brilliant blue alert beacons flashed in unison. Several of the consoles switched to panic mode, warning of imminent danger close at hand. Saru's threat ganglia opened in twitching fans as he felt the sudden and very real sense of threat. On the closest screen, a scan from the Star Freighter's sensor array was alight with new detections. Where there had been nothing before, now there were dozens of objects emerging from behind the sanctuary planet. A flotilla of attack drones were closing in on the transport in a swift, purposeful swarm. Trailing behind them was the wide arc of a carrier vessel, its particle beam turrets target-locking one after the other. Flickering globes of energy gathered at the tip of each cannon, holding in check enough firepower to rip the ship open with a single salvo.
11. The ship approached in an oblique trajectory, using the mass shadow of the sanctuary world to mask its approach from the Star Freighter's sensor array. In the moments of blindness while the transport's central computer matrix was offline, the Pelear warship had crossed the day-night terminator and powered toward its target. The remaining complement of its autonomous drones were deployed, blasting out of their silos and into a widening attack formation. By the time the transport's computer reawakened, the drones and their mothership were already inside optimum firing range for their weapons. Any avenues of escape the bigger, slower craft might have taken were closed off as the drones followed the same approach they had taken with the Shenzhou. They surrounded it, mimicking a tactic that the Pelear cohort had learned from the spinners of the Tholian assembly. The transport ship possessed defensive screens and a network of short-range plasma turrets on its dorsal and ventral hull, but they were not military-grade weapons, and the machine intelligences controlling the drones assessed them as being of middling lethality. On the warship, heavy-gauge particle emitters designed to punch through the hulls of enemy craft readied firing solutions, targeting warp engines, power trains, and the dense clumps of interlocked cargo modules. If battle were joined, it would be a massacre.
What did you do?
Maddo's words were a gasp, a strangled cry. Some of his previous fire rekindled as he glared at Saru.
I was right. All your talk of equity, and it meant nothing. You gave us up to the Pelears.
No. No. Saru shook his head. I warned you. I told you they were coming. We did not bring them here. Those drones, said Wheaton, half to himself. Robotic combat units, same as the one we saw escorting this ship back before all this kicked off. They're from Pelear Zell, all right.
A console to Saru's right let out a warning tone. An outside force was overriding the transport's shield controls, shutting them down. Then a humming whine rose from nothing, and rods of sparkling viridian light formed out of thin air in the very middle of the command deck, drawing everyone's attention. The beaming effect dissipated to reveal the forms of several armored Pelear soldiers and two imperious-looking Pelear males in the high headdresses of ranking officers. The older of the two scanned the room with a glower, and Saru saw Commander Nathal physically react at the sight of him.
Father,
she whispered. Saru glimpsed a new worrying vulnerability in Nathal that he hadn't thought her capable of.
I am Admiral Tall of the Pelear cohort, began the older officer,
and if he noticed his daughter among the assembled faces, he gave no indication of it.
This vessel will no longer be allowed to remain under the control of criminals.
His soldiers raised their disruptors, finding the Gorlands and taking aim at them.
Tell your compatriots, he went on, all resistance toward the directives of Pelear Zell is to halt immediately, or I will employ lethal force against you. Those responsible for acts of defiance will submit themselves for summary judgment. All remaining aliens in orbit are to deposit themselves on the designated sanctuary world. There will be no negotiation.
Vetch slumped against a support stanchion.
We failed. We gave up our advantage, and now we will perish. Here in the void, or down there on that poisoned rock.
Saru rounded on Nathal. Commander, please. You must do something. Nathal blinked as if coming out of a daze. Yes, of course. She straightened her tunic and stepped forward, giving a brisk salute at her shoulder.
Admiral, thank you for your intervention, but you may recall your escort, sir. This ship is already under Pelear control. The Gorlands who took over the craft have surrendered. They are no longer a danger.
I will be the arbiter of that, replied Taw. A grave series of events have occurred under your dominion, Commander. You bear the responsibility. The cohort is dissatisfied with your performance.
Nathal's double nostrils flared.
I accept that. My crew did the best they could against superior numbers.
She gestured at Saru.
These Federation officers helped us retake the ship without further violence.
Nathal faltered.
But, Admiral, this planet, what we were told about it...
Taw turned his attention to Saru, ignoring her.
Ah, yes. The meddlers from Starfleet.
He gave Saru a dismissive once-over.
A Kelpian? I have heard of your species. Still alive, are you? Your Captain Georgiou was quite concerned about your well-being.
Saru couldn't stop himself from asking the question. The Shenzhou, are they all right?
If they did as they were told, they will be fine, Taw said airily. I ordered them to return to your side of the border zone, for their own safety.
The Kelpian considered that reply, thinking of how his captain would take that demand. It didn't square with what Lieutenant Burnham had said, but Saru decided to keep the discrepancy to himself and pressed on. Admiral, I am Lieutenant Saru. As you are the highest-ranking officer of the Pelear Zell cohort present here,
I wish to offer my services to you as an independent third party to mediate for the Gorlan refugees aboard this ship, on behalf of the United Federation of... Saru trailed off as he realized that Taw was laughing at him. You find my words amusing, sir?
I find your arrogance amusing, Lieutenant, he snapped, his chilly humor vanishing. You have no authority here to offer anything, or expect anything. Perhaps you were not paying attention to my initial statement. Let me reiterate the relevant point. All aliens are to deposit themselves on the designated sanctuary world. That includes you and your Starfleet associates. This is the true face of Pelear's so-called altruism, said Mado, glaring at Saru. You see, yes? Now it is too late for any of us. It speaks.
Taw gave an arch sniff, as if noticing the Gorlan red band for the first time.
I have no need to hear what you have to say, criminal.
He refocused his attention on his daughter.
Commander, repatriate these aliens aboard the cargo containers and deposit them on the surface. Or must I have my adjutant do it for you?
He gestured to the other Pelear officer accompanying him, who took a wary step forward.
You're going to send them back there?
Nathal shot a glance at the desolate world on the main screen.
Father, look at it. The Alphan Council told us this place was verdant, that the Gorlans would have a fair chance at a new life. But that was never true, was it?
Child, he intoned. I taught you to be smarter than this. In warfare, certain realities have to be accepted. Don't be naive.
We are not at war with the Gorlans, she countered.
Taw's displeasure deepened.
You talk like a Baton. I expected more.
Admiral, that world is a harsh and unforgiving wilderness, insisted Saru. If you abandon these people there, you doom them.
Then they can thank me for thinning the herd.
Taw was dismissive.
The Gorlans boast of their fortitude. This planet will give them ample opportunity to prove it, and Pelear Zell will be rid of a distraction our worlds never wanted.
You cannot do this!
Saru's voice rose with his ire.
Have you no empathy?
Despite whatever violence a handful of these people may have committed in their desperation, you cannot sentence tens of thousands of innocents to a slow death. The flesh of his face colored as indignant rage overwhelmed his innate instinct for self-preservation.
I won't allow it. The Federation will not allow it.
The Federation won't hear of it.
Taw sniffed, and the threat hung silently in the air.
Sir,
Taw's adjutant dared to speak for the first time.
I would counsel against any rash actions that might jeopardize Pelear Zell's future membership in the Federation.
Be silent, Kreia.
Taw waved him away.
The chattering politicians of Alpha and Beta are light years distant. I am the authority here.
I will always serve Pelear Zell and the cohort, Nathal began. And I have no loyalty to these aliens.
As it should be, said Taw.
She disregarded him and kept speaking.
But I do have a moral code. Those who acted against my crew must answer for what they have done, yes. But Lieutenant Saru is right. I won't be a party to this.
Taw gave his daughter a withering stare.
I should have expected this. There is too much of your pair mothers in you.
I think now that they taught me better than you ever did, she shot back.
The Admiral glanced around, finding Nathal's subordinate.
You, the second in command, Hekan, isn't it? Nathal is relieved of her captaincy. You're in charge now. Execute my orders.
Hekan folded her arms and stood fast.
I'm afraid you won't find anyone on this ship who will go against our commander, sir.
Oh?
Taw's gaze swept the chamber and zeroed in on Saru once more.
Is this your poisonous influence, alien? Bad enough that your sickly Federation moralizing has won over the Baetons and the weak-willed among my fellow Alphans, but now you think that I will swallow it too?
He clasped his hands together.
Very well. I'll make this clear for everyone concerned one final time. Follow my orders now, to the letter, and I may be willing to consider this a minor outbreak of insubordination, induced by the stress of recent events. But if anyone refuses, if the Gorlands do not return to the sanctuary of their own accord...
From the corner of his eye, Saru saw the blink of indicators flashing on dozens of vacant consoles. Ensign Wheaton stepped closer to one, his brow furrowing as he examined the screen.
"I will have my gunners disable this barge,"
Taw continued, unaware of what was going on.
"And then blast those cargo modules free, and they will fall back to the surface where they belong. I don't imagine all of them would survive an uncontrolled descent, so consider the choice carefully."
But Saru's attention was fixed on the other Starfleet officer. Wheaton had gone pale.
"Lieutenant?" He beckoned the Kelpian over. "You really need to see this."
"Do not ignore me!"
raged Taw. But Saru did exactly that, crossing to the console in two loping steps.
"My orders are all you need to concern yourself with."
As Saru studied the data on the panel, his threat ganglia pulled tight, and he had to physically restrain himself from reaching up to press at the tiny dendrite-like fronds.
"You are gravely mistaken, Admiral."
The brief surge of anger that had buoyed Saru up beyond the reach of his deeper, fearful nature now fell away as a new and more lethal threat made itself apparent. "I would direct your attention to subspace frequency 0114. Taw's adjutant Crea peered at a digital panel fixed to the forearm of his uniform, and he tapped a few keys on the device. The Pelear reacted with shock and whispered something that Saru didn't catch. Taw spun toward his officer.
"What? What did you say?"
All his bluster seemed to evaporate in an instant as he drew into a hissed, secretive conversation with Crea.
0114, said Hekan, thinking aloud. "That's a general frequency used by the Tholians."
Saru was already tapping at the panel. A holographic projection phased into being across from where they stood, and it resembled a piece of abstract art. Against a twinkling background stood a diamond-shaped pillar cut from misty crystal, vanishing out of sight beneath the image pickup. The upper facets of the form were broken by a pair of harsh eye spots that glowed with infernal light. When it spoke, the Tholian's screeching, grating communication became a high-pitched, haughty voice rendered through a translator matrix.
"Attention, intruder vessels! We have determined that your craft represent a threat to the security of the Tholian Assembly. We have dispatched a defensive force to this star system. It will arrive presently. We expect your craft to be beyond the outer orbit of the system at that time. Any vessel remaining within that perimeter will be considered a threat and dealt with accordingly."
Its message delivered, the image of the Tholian blinked out.
"How soon is presently?"
said Wheaton as Saru pivoted over another of the podium consoles. "Sensors are picking up unidentified readings at the edge of range," he said carefully. "Judging by motion and energy output, 2, possibly 3 ships. They'll be here in 9.7 minutes. Hekan gasped.
"Even if we go to warp right now, with the added mass of those cargo modules, we won't make it past the outer orbit before they catch up with us."
"They know that," said Mado bitterly. "A potential threat. We are nothing of the kind, just as our colony was no danger to them."
"Were we meant to perish there?"
Vetch muttered, his head bowed.
"Is this fate catching up to us? Events repeat themselves. We are condemned.
Not yet, Saru insisted, overlooking the hollow ring of his own words. His thoughts raced as he struggled to formulate a solution to the imminent problem.
Mr. Wheaton, Engineer Hekan, would it be possible to modify the warp bubble generated by this ship and merge it with that of the warship?
In theory. The ensign gave the Pelear woman a questioning look.
It could be done, admitted Hekan. We have dozens of heavy-duty tractor beam emitters on our outer hull. They could be used to secure both ships together.
Wheaton nodded rapidly, picking up Saru's idea and running with it.
Stresses would be high, and the spatial drag would slow down the carrier severely, but it could work.
He paused, blinking as he tried to figure it out.
Ensign, would we make the perimeter in time? Saru pressed.
I don't know,
Wheaton admitted. But better we try. Across the compartment, Admiral Taw turned slowly back to face them. He seemed to have aged years in the space of a few seconds, briefly struck silent by the unexpected arrival of the new danger.
Listen to me,
he grated, his previously superior and languid manner now replaced with what Saru saw was genuine dread.
The Pelear-Zell cohort's standing orders are unequivocal in this situation. Under no circumstances are our ships to engage in any actions that will antagonize the Tholian assembly.
He turned to bark a command to his adjutant.
Recall all the drones immediately. Task the carrier's helm to put all power to the star drive.
Father, Nathal approached him. Admiral, what are you doing?
A tactical reevaluation, he snapped. Come, I will have my transporter operator lock on to all Pelear life signs. Prepare yourselves. We are leaving.
You're going to abandon this ship and everyone aboard it to the Tholians?
Saru said the words aloud, and still he could hardly believe it. It was one thing to be ready to force the Gorlands to return to the desolate planet below, and quite another to leave them here on a lightly armed cargo barge at the mercy of a Tholian attack force.
The drones have disengaged and are falling back toward the carrier, reported Wheaton. He's gonna do it, Lieutenant!
Nathal was aghast at her father's actions. She looked to the adjutant for support.
Kreia, say something! You cannot sanction this!
Don't make demands of him,
Taw retorted, regaining some of his previous venom.
I am in command here. You will obey me!
Saru could taste the raw terror crackling through the air of the compartment. He sensed it in the thrumming, silent pressure of the aura fields cast out by the fearful Gorlands, saw it on the faces of the Pelears, and felt the acidic churn of his own anxieties threatening to rise up and engulf him. The raw, potent power of the fear, his old, constant, and most hated companion, seemed to come at the Kelpian from every angle at once. It took all of his will to hold it at bay.
Admiral, if you run, what do you think will happen?
He fixed the Pelear officer with a grimace.
Do you believe the Tholians will stop here if they are not challenged? It has always been in their nature to press the limits around them. If you take your ship and retreat, they will see you go. They will be able to track your ion trail.
Maybe all the way back to Pelear Zell,
Wheaton added darkly.
Perhaps,
said Taw.
Perhaps not. If they are on the move, then it is even more imperative to warn the Alpha and Beta moons to prepare.
He tapped at his own wrist control.
I do not fight battles that cannot be won.
You won't even try?
All of Nathal's flinty exterior was suddenly gone, and Saru saw through to something of who she really was and the conflict she was caught in.
Activate!
Taw raised his arm, speaking into the device, but his words were choked off as his daughter aimed a phaser at his chest.
Sir!
One of the armored Pelear troopers called out. He and his men were uncertain where to aim their weapons.
What do we do?
Hold your fire,
ordered the adjutant before Taw could respond.
No, Father, Nathal told Tall. I won't run. My crew will not run. Saru is right. We must defy the Tholians.
You're taking tactical advice from a being genetically programmed to be a coward, retorted the Admiral.
I can overcome my instincts when the situation demands it, Saru said, with as much firmness as he could muster. Can you say the same, sir?
Gorlans will fight, shouted Mado. We have nothing left but our defiance.
For each other,
Vetch said with a resigned nod.
For our community, and for the hub.
Taw's fear built into fury as he glared at his daughter.
So be it. I hoped for better from you, but the truth is you have always been a disappointment to me, child. Stay here with these alien mongrels and die, then. I am leaving.
No, said Nathal, looking to Saru for a nod of support. You're not. We must protect the Gorlans, just as we promised we would.
Off her cue, the Kelpian stepped in and tore the control device from Taw's wrist before he could use it.
The people of Pelearzel looked the Gorlans in the eye, and they promised them safety.
Saru cast around, meeting the gazes of the Pelear soldiers one by one.
Was that a lie, or was it the truth?
Each of you has a choice to make, as Commander Nathal did. Will you let other sentient beings die, or will you band together against a greater threat that can destroy us all?
Outworlder lives are not worth Pelear lives, Taw shouted.
Who among you truly believes that?
Saru asked, in the stark silence that followed. Kreia gave a slow shake of the head.
We made a promise, he said, echoing Nathal's words.
He raised his wrist unit and spoke into it.
Carrier control, belay previous orders. Go to battle status and configure the drones into a defensive screen.
You too?
Taw scowled at his subordinate.
But then this is what I get for elevating a Baton to a combat post.
Adjutant, said a voice over the open channel. Where is Admiral Taw?
He has been relieved of duty, said the other Pelear. We are staying to fight.
Fools,
muttered Nathal's father.
Now we will all perish.
Off that bleak prediction, the compartment's atmosphere was cut by a proximity alert that sounded from the console before Ensign Wheaton. The engineer picked at the haptic keypad and his eyes narrowed.
Huh. 9.7 minutes on the dot. The Tholians really are as punctual as everyone says.
The fates watch over us, said Kreia. We will return to the carrier and prepare for battle.
With another tap on his control, the Pelear boarding party were snatched back by their transporters. Saru didn't miss the venomous glare Taw spared for his daughter as he dematerialized.
You did the right thing, he told her.
I don't need your platitudes, Saru,
she retorted, turning stony once more.
I need a way to defeat them.
She pointed at the main view screen. At the upper edge of the display, a trio of silver craft, sleek and sharp like arrowheads, were slipping into position. The Tholian ships moved in swift dashing motions akin to the way that fish would dart beneath the surface of a river, making it difficult for any weapons system or gunner to draw a bead on them. Shimmering crimson power grids on their tri-lobed hulls bled excess energy out into the darkness as they shed velocity, slowing to make a combat approach. The formation dithered, then parted. Two ships rolled together into a new element, bringing their needle prows to bear on the Pelear warship. They moved front-on, presenting the smallest possible target aspect to their opponent. The third vessel broke away in a hard power turn that became a spiraling course toward the slow-moving bulk of the star freighter. Bubbles of glittering light briefly shimmered around the Pelear craft as their crews put up their deflector shields, but the Tholians moved in undaunted. There was no pause in their actions, no hint of hesitation. Weapons grids drew power from within, and the pre-fire arrays of their particle beam cannons were readied. One way or another, conflict was coming to the skies above the sanctuary planet.
Attention, intruder vessels!
The screeching tone of the alien voice was like scraping two pieces of broken glass across each other, and the dissonant sound set Saru's teeth on edge.
You have made no credible attempt to depart this area. Therefore, your craft have been designated as enemy combatants and will be treated as such. In the interest of amity, the Tholian Assembly will allow you to surrender unharmed. Depower all weapons, shields, and drive systems. Do it now!
The iridescent holograph of the alien being shimmered in the middle of the command deck as if being viewed through a heat haze. Saru recalled a xenobiology briefing suggesting that the interior temperature of Tholian craft was kept at several hundred degrees, and he tried to imagine what kind of life could have evolved to live at that extreme.
We're not going to be doing any of that, said Nathal. It is as we expected, replied the Tholian.
Saru was startled. He hadn't realized that the transmission was live, expecting to get another self-contained statement as they had before. He took a step forward, a flash of hope stirring in him. If the Tholian was talking with them, then they were not fighting, and if they were not fighting, there was still a slim chance to stop this from escalating. We have no wish for battle, but what you ask is unreasonable. Our presence here is in no way a threat to your species or its territories.
Untrue,
came the harsh rejoinder.
Your presence alone is the threat.
You're wasting your breath, Kelpian, said Vetch. I said the same thing to them when they came to our colony, and received the same answers. They're not interested in compromise.
Why not? Saru looked back at the hologram, his mind racing. Why are you doing this? Do you really wish to provoke an interstellar conflict?
The provocation is yours, grated the Tholian. We observe and evaluate. You build bases from which to conduct espionage operations against the Assembly.
It's talking about the Gorlan colony planet, said Wheaton. They think we had something to do with that?
You establish military alliances that imperil our borders, continued the hologram. We react to protect ourselves.
You mean the discussions with the Federation? Hekan shot Saru a look. How are they aware?
We observe and evaluate, repeated the Tholian.
Saru raised his hands in an unconscious gesture of appeasement. You are mistaken. The Gorlans are not part of the United Federation of Planets, and we have no part in their colonial missions. They, like the beings of Pelear-Zel and your species, are our neighbors. We seek only to coexist in peace.
You are not like us,
said the Tholian, and Saru could not deny the edge of menace in the words.
Carbon-based forms are inherently inferior. Inherently dangerous. You will be removed.
The hologram dissipated, and in the next second, Maddo was shouting out in alarm.
They've opened fire!
Bright shocks of coruscating light stabbed from the prows of the Tholian craft and lanced through a cluster of Pelear drones, puncturing their deflectors and reducing them to shrapnel. The attacker triad blasted past the defensive line erected by the warship without slowing, even as the remainder of the drone squadron reacted and tried to waylay them. The Tholian spinners continued to power ahead on their attack vectors, ignoring the smaller automated craft in favor of the two larger targets. The battle pair moved as if an invisible tether were connecting both vessels, vectoring into a twisting barrel roll that brought them hurtling down toward the ship's flat, curved hull. Particle guns on the surface of the Pelear ship opened up, spewing jags of crimson fire into the path of the dart-like attackers, but they hit nothing but dead vacuum.
The agile Tholians suddenly broke formation and fired at the carrier's fuselage, cracking sectors of the shields and striking hard secondary hits that overloaded plasma conduits and liquefied hull metal into scattered gobs of flash-melted tritanium. The drone force, acting on its networked commands, swarmed back toward its parent vessel, driven by pre-programmed directives that compelled them to protect their mothership. Controllers on board the carrier worked to retask them, but it was too late. A window of vulnerability had opened over the transport ship, and the remaining Tholian spinner shot toward it, becoming a hurled dagger.
"Incoming!"
called Saru, watching the shape of the silver attacker grow larger on the main monitor. In comparison to the transport ship, the Tholian craft was small, but the power curves it exhibited showed a deadly energy-to-mass ratio. Its internal systems were keyed to weapons functionality. Where the transport was built to shift vast amounts of cargo across star systems, the Tholian craft was constructed around the lethal particle cannon that ran the length of its core. It was, in every sense of the term, a gunship. All around him, figures scrambled to man the command deck's empty stations, Pelear, Gorlan, and Starfleet alike, but there were not enough of them to operate all of the giant vessel's complex systems. Saru saw the danger as it unfolded. Too few to run the ship, too slow to get away, too weak to put up a real fight. For all his earlier thoughts of defiance, the Kelpian wondered if at last he had gone too far for his own good.
"Thrusters!" Nathal called to him. "Roll the ship, Saru!"
"Yes!" He saw the commander's intention, and his long fingers raced over the panel in front of him, bringing up the attitude control matrix. He fired the huge ship's clusters of ion jets in bursts of blue fire, and the view on the screen shifted. Turning a hulk as big as the Star Freighter was a difficult proposition at any time, and there was no way they would be able to avoid getting hit by the nimble spinner vectoring in on them. But rolling the vessel along the length of its primary axis would mean that incoming fire could not concentrate in any single location. A streamer of brilliant flame connected the tip of the Tholian ship with the Pelear transport, and the huge vessel's shields buckled as gigawatts of destructive power poured into them. Under Saru's deft control, the freighter spun, turning away from the crippling blow and spreading the incoming attack over a wider area. Flashburn overspill from the particle beam drew an ugly scar of carbon scoring across the hull plates.
"Take the brunt of it on the forward section," ordered Nathal.
She didn't need to explain that any hits aft of that part of the ship risked puncturing the cargo modules packed with terrified Gorlan refugees.
"I can't connect," said Wheaton.
He called out to Hekan,
"What's wrong with these targeting grids on these plasma turrets? Every time I try to draw a bead on that Tholian, the shots go wide."
Hekan stabbed a finger at a vacant podium near where Wheaton was standing.
"The stabilizer system is out of harmony. Someone man that station. Help him!"
"Which one of us?"
Vetch took a half-step away from his own panel, then faltered.
"Should I? I don't know."
The deck quaked as the Tholian attacker followed up its initial assault with a salvo of torpedo shots, and Vetch was thrown to the floor. Saru hung on to his own podium for dear life, but he couldn't miss the flash of orange discharge on one of the secondary viewscreens. The torpedoes punched through the shields and struck one of the transport's warp nacelles. Saru gasped as the entire engine pod was ripped free of its support pylon, tumbling away end over end into the ship's impulse wake to collide with an escort drone that had been racing to catch up with them. "There's not enough of us to adequately operate this vessel under combat conditions," he said flatly, tearing his communicator from his belt. Saru flicked it open and spoke into the pickup.
"Yashe, Subin, get up to the command deck on the double. Bring anyone you can."
"Negative, Lieutenant. We have problems of our own," replied the Vakshah.
"That last hit blew out an EPS relay down here. We have fires in the corridor. I'm getting everyone out of the compartment, sir.
There was a pause, and Saru heard the distant crunch of twisting metal.
We'll get to you if we can.
Understood, Chief, he said. If all else fails, fall back to the Yang and detach. We will attempt to do our best up here.
Saru looked up as Mado drew his own communication device.
You need people? I can bring them.
Do it,
said Saru, and he shot Nathal a look, heading off her complaint before she could voice it.
We don't have time to be choosy, Commander.
The Pelear woman scowled, and she resembled her father's severe bearing.
It won't matter if we can't work together.
Something is happening, called Vetch. The other two Tholians, they're falling back.
He's right, said Wheaton. Lieutenant, the sensors are reading very strong energy surges aboard each ship. A new pattern. Something we haven't seen before.
In careful lockstep, the two spinners harrying the Pelear warship veered off and looped around as the bulk of the drone flotilla came powering across the dark toward them. Pulse bursts jetted from cannon maws on the automated craft as the escorts tried to lay down a wall of fire. The machine intelligences inside the drones networked with one another over their subspace links, coordinating their counterattack to place the maximum amount of lethality across the path of the Tholians. The memory banks carried by the drones were filled with thousands of hours of long-range sensor scans, predictive models, and espionage data based on what Pelear Zell knew of the forces of Tholia. But for all that, what the drones lacked was the ability of a non-synthetic intellect, the insight to make a choice that was truly random, truly unexpected. Against reason, the Tholian two-ship formation turned toward the incoming fire and threaded the gaps in the salvo as bright, glittering needles passed through the weft of spun cloth. The collective network of the drones detected the unusual energy pattern building up in both ships, but could not recognize it. No scans or records of such a pattern existed in Pelear records. The reason for that was a simple one. No ship from Pelear Zell had ever survived the weapon the Tholians were about to deploy. The effect burst from the hulls of the two spinners in a crackling wave front, coruscating blue lightning expanding outward in milliseconds until it spread wide enough to pass through the drone force. Each drone, touched by the passing of the twin-lobed wave, suffered the same catastrophic overload sequence. First, their meager deflectors collapsed. Then their power systems were swamped by an incredible flood of energy that blasted through their surge protectors. The high-intensity energy-dampening field emitted by the Tholians faded after only a few thousand meters, but the drones had gathered so closely that the effect was devastating. Thruster grids died, and weapons arrays went dark. But the forward momentum of the Pelear escorts was unchecked, and the drones became a cloud of uncontrolled missiles. Several of the robotic craft collided with one another, some tumbling away into the gravity well of the planet below, others pitching into crash courses with their mothership, forcing the gunners on the carrier to destroy their own craft or risk a deadly impact. Most of the affected drones obliterated each other in short-lived fireballs, gutting the offensive capacity of the larger Pelear warship in less than a minute. The use of the weapon was like the Tholians themselves. Ruthless, precise, and unyielding. The most immediate threat to them neutered, the two spinners reversed their course and shot back toward the warship, once more weaving side to side as they passed smoothly through the expanding debris field their attack had created. Crimson beams flashed from the sharp prows of each ship, combining their fire to impact the same points on the carrier's outer hull. Plates of metal across the exterior of the sickle-shaped craft boiled off in gaseous jets of sun-hot plasma, and a violent shuddering racked the Pelear warship as vital systems were burned out. The warship's gunners had no way of knowing how long the energy dampener weapon's recharge cycle would take, only that if their vessel was rendered inert, then the Tholians would be free to cut them apart at their leisure, or worse.
build one of their strange energy webs around the carrier and drag it back into their domain. The Pelear crew fought with the terrified desperation of those facing an enemy they only knew through rumor and half-truths. Beam salvos cut the dark orbital space, slicing through vacuum as they tried to find their targets. With the melee